The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Good day, everyone, and welcome again to another edition of Boomer Generation Radio. This is your host, Richard Address, coming to you from the studios of WWDB AM 860 here in the Delaware Valley. And we're streaming live on WWDBAM.com. And a reminder that if you want to contact the show and with any suggestions or comments, you can email us at boomergenerationradio@gmail.com. That's boomergenerationradio@gmail.com. And we have a couple of guests today on our show. This is another opportunity to meet an author, and I hope on the line, courtesy of our producer, Tony. Sherry, are you there?
I'm here. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you? You're calling in from L.A., right?
I am.
Good. Well, how are things today on the coast?
The weather is beautiful, and I'm awake, so all is good.
So we're talking to Sherry Samotin, the author of Facing the Finish, A Roadmap for Aging Parents and Adult Children. And welcome, Sherry. Thank you very much for joining us and getting up early and calling in. We appreciate it. This book, very, very fascinating, filled with all kinds of very, very important practical information and a whole list of resources, websites, etc. in the back. Facing the Finish, A Roadmap for Aging Parents and Adult Children. So the obvious first question is, what made you write this? What's the background?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I grew up in L.A., left and went to college in the Northeast, spent time in New York, and then ended up in Naples, Florida, which is a haven for snowbirds. And often people move far away from their families when they're newly retired, young and healthy and energetic. And these people became my friends. Well, fast forward 15 years later, all of a sudden my 60-something-year-old friends were turning 80, and life was beginning to happen. They were dealing with death. They were dealing with serious medical illness. They were dealing with dementia, either of their own or a loved one. And they were still far away from their families, and they began asking me for all kinds of help, which was different from the relationship before, when we had just kind of been extended family, both sides being far away from our core family. And what ended up happening is over and over I'd be asked for the same help, the same questions, and out of that I, back in 2009, started a business. The business then became the book as clients and friends started saying, where can I buy the book? So eventually I wrote it.
So the book, Facing the Finish, well, where can you get the book? Is this on Amazon and bookstores?
It's on Amazon. It's on Barnes & Noble, or you can get it from facingthefinish.com directly from the website. And it's available both as a physical book as well as an e-book.
So Facing the Finish is if I'm correct, the name of the business, correct?
My business is actually LifeBridge Solutions.
LifeBridge Solutions. That's right. That's okay. And I'm holding the brochure. And LifeBridge Solutions, very, very important. The inside it says, offers a compassionate and carefully planned approach to coping with life-changing and difficult events. Translate that. What does that mean? Transitions do?
Okay, well, what I wish everyone would do would be to have a life transition plan.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's kind of like an owner's manual for your life. So we have an owner's manual for our car and our dishwasher and pretty much anything with a moving part. Why not one for our lives? And what I find is when people go down that path, it's easy to gather up their list of accounts or their list of important phone numbers, but pretty much everybody runs out of steam when they start dealing with the really important questions like, where do I want to live out my years? Where do I want to die? What am I going to do if I can't take care of myself? How am I going to pay for it? Who do I want to care for me? Who do I want making decisions for me? So that's what a life transition plan is, and that's what I wish all my clients would do. The reality is I usually get called in the midst of a crisis, often by adult children, who are dealing at long distance with parents aging and something happened and they don't know what to do or where to turn. And then we also provide practical daily services like daily money management, which is managing the mail, paying the bills, dealing with Medicare, waiting on hold with the cable company, whatever it is that our older adult or special needs clients can't do for themselves.
If you could solve the waiting on hold for the cable company problem, you'd retire in a minute.
And I wish I could. Unfortunately, so far the only way to do it is to wait.
This idea of a plan. We've had financial people on a regular basis here on Boomer Generation Radio. Everybody talks about the need to sit down when you're, quote, healthy, when you can make decisions with outside of a crisis, as you just mentioned, to have this plan, a financial plan, a caregiving plan, a facility where you want to live plan, even a dying plan. So the obvious follow-up question to that, Sherry, is in your experience having done this and doing this for years, why is it still so difficult for people to do this?
Well, I think that there's three reasons. Number one, the subjects of money and death are still taboo subjects in many families and in many cultures. We just don't share information about what's going on financially, and people aren't comfortable talking about death. So I think those are two very practical issues. I think that, though, that there's a third reason, and that is that the two generations, the older adults and the adult children, have in their own minds assumptions about starting the conversation, and because of those assumptions, they simply don't go there.
Such as?
And in particular, I have many older adult clients who actually would like to talk about this with their families, but they fear that doing so will upset their children or scare them or burden them in some way. And I have adult children clients who want to start the conversation, and they're afraid that doing so will upset or depress their parents.
We're talking with Sherry Samotin, the author of Facing the Future, a Roadmap for Aging Parents and Their Adult Children. And you can obtain this book, as Sherry was saying, through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It's a print book and an e-book. And you're listening to Boomer Generation Radio here on WWDB AM 860 in Philadelphia, brought to you in large part by our friends at the Kendall Corporation, who are, through their work, helping to transform this challenge of aging in the United States of America. Life Transition Services, Life Bridge Solutions, is it like a coaching service, Sherry?
Well, some of our work is the coaching work, and the other, as I said, is the practical day-to-day daily money management, which is really, in front of the computer and with the pencil pushed behind the ear.
Mm-hmm. And this is because you're calling in from LA. Is this a national program, or is it just right now localized?
It is.
Okay, so somebody's listening and say, well, you know, maybe I can call this woman up and get some help because we really have to do this. How does one get in touch with you?
The easiest way is email, and that would be info@lifebridgesolutions.com. info@lifebridgesolutions.com, and I respond to all of them.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that's becoming more and more, I don't know what the right word is, it's challenging. Let's just use challenging is what I'm calling the economics of aging, the cost, the sheer cost of growing older in the United States of America, from healthcare issues to medical concerns to the actual moving of an individual from point A to point B. Is this part of the way you develop a plan for your clients?
I do. You know what? I like to say, let's let the math talk, because very often in families there's disagreement about where mom or dad should live and or how mom or dad should be cared for. And when we actually put the black and white together of the numbers and lay it out over not a month or two, but years, sometimes as long as 10 or 15 years if we're dealing with someone newly diagnosed with something like Alzheimer's or Parkinson's disease. Letting the math talk is really important to making good decisions.
How much of a challenge is, and I'm sure you get involved with this, of the long distance caring? You know, this comes up a lot in our conversations in with working with individuals that I've worked with. I'm sure this comes up on a regular basis. You're in L.A., you know, you'll get a call from somebody living in Tarzana saying, you know, mom and dad are living in their condominium. They moved out to Scottsdale, but they're getting older and frailer, and we can't go back and forth, so we need to move them back into where we are. How often do you get that challenging question?
Oh, I'd say every day. And, you know, where it really begins with is coming up with the goal of, number one, our job is to keep mom or dad safe. That's number one. And number two is as independent as possible, given the reality of their medical situation, their cognitive situation, and their financial situation. And, you know, the call that you've just expressed, we're going to move them back, I usually say, whoa, Nellie, and let's slow down here, and let's figure out, you know, can mom or dad articulate what they want? Because maybe all their friends are in Scottsdale.
Mm-hmm.
And if you move them to Tarzana and all they have is the four walls of the room that they're living in, they may become very isolated and very miserable very quickly, and maybe there's another solution. And so what I like to do is help families figure out how to build a team. That team might be close to where mom or dad is, or maybe the team is close to where the kids are, and maybe the answer is to bring mom or dad closer. It's a very personal and individualized decision and discussion.
In dealing with our generation, dealing with the baby boom generation who wants to, you know, we were raised trying to control everything, and we're really now we're seeing this all over our society, trying to control our own aging and trying to control our own death. This concept of independence, you allude to it in the book, and I'm sure you run into this. We want to stay as independent as long as possible. You know, I'm sure you've had situations where you've had that life plan conversation where it just becomes absolutely imperative to tell that older adult, it's impossible, you just can't do this anymore because of the needs that you have. Walk me through a scenario of how, and this may, I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, but and I know each case is different, but generally, how do we deal with that reality, coming to the reality that we're losing our ability to live independently?
Well, I have that situation with a client family right now. So mom was on death's door, enrolled in hospice. She rallied. Hospice went away, and now she's living at home with 24/7 care, and she's a queen. She thinks this is great.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is the family realizes they cannot afford this indefinitely, and they're also concerned that while the caregivers are wonderful, that perhaps a different kind of living environment would be better for her emotionally and socially as well. While mom doesn't want any part of moving out of her home, there's six children involved. Four of them are on board with a move, two of them are not. So how do we navigate that? Well, one way is to try to find points of agreement. So what I've been able to do is get all of them, mom and the six kids, to agree that they want her to be safe and independent. We've then moved from there to define what does independent realistically mean for her for now, and have set some goals at home and said, if we can achieve these goals within a time frame, and in this case the time frame is 3 months, then we can reduce the caregiving, and then she can probably stay at home for a while. If we cannot achieve these specific goals at home within 3 months, then we're going to have to transition, and we've selected the assisted living facility where that will be.
This sibling rivalry that you just, I mean, to use a common phrase, you know, when you have X numbers of siblings in agreement, but you have a vocal minority of siblings who are not. How often do you run into this, and what happens when the two siblings or the siblings just don't agree?
Well, I run into this all the time, and that may be, you know, honestly, I may see more of it because people with family issues are the ones who tend to call people like me for help. When everybody agrees, maybe they don't need me. But what I find is very often, again, if we can find points of agreement, sometimes we have to let the math do the talking, because very often, even though everyone says it's not about the money, yes, in fact it is.
Right.
We may have, you know, those two siblings may be worried about burning through what will be their inheritance, and that's what's really driving them. And they don't want to say that. Maybe they don't even consciously know it. But unless we unpack that and deal with it, then the issues are going to still come up. But sometimes these siblings are going back to the kitchen table from when they were 12 and 14, and they're kind of having the same arguments they had then about who does dad like better and how come mom favors you and all of those kinds of things. So some of it is so ingrained and so deep that we finally have to work around it. And I hate to do that. But there's times when the practical reality is one of the siblings isn't going to get on board. They're going to be unhappy. So we need to give them every opportunity to participate. And if they can't or they won't, we've got to move forward anyway.
Yeah, it's one of the most amazing things in the work that I do, you know, with in my community and in the JewishSacredAging.com website and talks, is how often that what you exactly said comes true, that the patterns that were established in childhood amongst brothers and sisters emerge at these times in very sometimes subtle and sometimes not so subtle ways. It's always fascinating to me, and invariably, well, not invariably, but often, and I'm sure you've had that conversation in your office or in somebody's home, where somebody just reverts back to, well, you always did it this way, or, you know, mom always treated you this way, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's just a fascinating scenario to see played out, and really can impact, and often does, the caregiving component of an adult child to their parent. We're talking with Sherry Samotin, the author of Facing the Future, A Roadmap for Aging Parents and Their Adult Children, a book that's available electronically through the usual sources, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, also available as an ebook. And Sherry's involved with and heads LifeBridge Solutions, helping you to navigate life's transitions. And again, the contact information, Sherry, to get a hold of you, that website, and how do they do that? Info at what?
Sure. To email, the best way is info@lifebridgesolutions.com. And for more information about the book, just go to facingthefinish.com, and you can even order the book and the workbook directly from there.
So I want to ask you about what I call the B word, which I would imagine in your work comes up, I would bet you, every once in a while, and that is burden. You know, I don't want to be a burden to my, and then fill in the blank. How often do you see this? I'm going to bet that you see it on a fairly regular basis. How does this get played out in making that life plan?
Well, I do. And often the people who don't want to be the burden many times are the very best planners, because they realize that by making decisions, articulating those decisions to someone, and maybe they're not ready to give that information to their children, but they'll leave it with me or an attorney or an accountant or a clergy person, somebody who's a trusted advisor. And what I say to clients is just give them that person's card and let your kids know that when the time comes, they should break the glass and pull out the card, and that person knows what you will need to know. But I find that people who are worried about being a burden very often are the best planners. They will actually make decisions and implement their decisions. Not always, but often.
So you mentioned the role of a clergy person. So as one, I do want to ask you this question. In your conversations in making these life plans with LifeBridge, how often does the issue of one's own spirituality come into play in making this life plan?
Well, you know, I always ask questions around that. Questions like, how do you define a meaningful life at this point in your life? And what is your purpose? Because in my work, I find that people who have a reason to get up every day beyond simply being here for another day are often doing better physically and cognitively and emotionally because that spiritual component is there. So I like to bring it up, and I find that the clients who are able to have that conversation and think in that way are actually better able to make tough decisions like leaving their home of 40 years, for example, because we begin to talk about what makes it a home. Is it the pictures on the wall, which can go with you, or is it the walls themselves and the memories that those walls contain? And we talk about making new memories because we get to keep doing that until our last breath.
You know, in I'm sure you've run across this in the years that you've been developing this, not only in the book, but also in the business, in LifeBridge Solutions. But what would you say, based upon your experience, or some of the mistakes that adult children will make when caring, when wanting to care for their aging parents? Where everybody's, in many places, they're very well motivated. We want to do something for mom and dad. And even at the end of your book, that you talk about the Judeo-Christian thrust of the fifth commandment of honoring and respecting a parent. But what, you know, for our audience, what are some of the, what you would say, two or three basic mistakes that may be made by an adult child trying to do the right thing?
Well, number one, it's not having important conversations at the right time, and either because of fear or busyness or whatever it is, those things don't get done. So that's the number one thing, and I advise everyone, let's talk about things often and early, because it's much better to do it from a place of this is just normal as opposed to in the midst of a crisis. So I'd say that's number one. However, once an adult child is in the kind of caregiving mode, the biggest mistake I see is adult children who take over rather than taking charge. And there's a very fine line between taking charge and taking over, but taking over isn't the answer.
So give me the distinction.
For me, the distinction is around something I said earlier, and that is our job is to keep mom or dad safe. And for me, safety is the difference. So if mom or dad shouldn't be driving, and they're getting into accidents and hurting themselves or property or, God forbid, other people, you have to step in and take over and get them out of that situation, take the keys away, which is really hard to do. That's a safety issue. You have to take over. But sometimes the discussions are around decisions that are not safety issues. They're about independence issues, perhaps, but not safety issues. And what I remind adult children is, you know, if mom or dad has the capacity to make a decision, they can make what you think are good ones or they can make what you think are bad ones, same as you. So just because you make what I think is a bad decision, does that mean you lack capacity and I should take over? I don't think so. So it's that understanding that just because you don't agree with a decision doesn't mean it's a bad one.
No, I know in our tradition, the medieval commentaries on that fifth commandment really discuss, actually, and there's some literature even in the contemporary world, the concept of stewardship in the sense of an older adult, of a parent is, you know, mentally competent, understands the decisions they're making, but I, as that adult child, happen to disagree with it. I see this a lot of times between a traditional burial versus cremation. This is coming up a lot lately. And in counseling people, you'll say, you know, you may disagree with this and you may have a conversation with your parent, but they know that's their, they have the right to make up their mind. And, you know, your duty is to respect that wish, even though you may particularly happen to disagree with it. We also see this in people coming home who choose, for example, in very, very serious illnesses, I'm thinking of several families with cancers, and they basically say, I've made up my mind, I don't want any more, I'm taking charge, I'm coming home, I go into hospice, I want to understand the end of my life and control it, as opposed, and with people in the family saying, no, you can't do this, how can you do this? It's a very tenuous tightrope that a lot of times is being walked, which I'm sure you see all the time.
Well, exactly, and I see it both with clients who are caring for family members, but also as a professional fiduciary when I'm been appointed as someone's guardian or healthcare decision maker or conservator. I have to use the doctrine of substituted judgment, which is what would that person have done had they been able to do that decision themselves, versus the best interest doctrine, which is what do I think is in his or her best interest. And that's that fine line between taking charge and taking over and knowing which side of the line you're on.
Before we run out of time, and we're about to, I want to ask you your advice that you would, I'm sure this comes up as well. You talk about the documents, the advance directives, the healthcare proxies, the wills, et cetera. These are very, very important documents. How do you advise your clients where to place these documents? Who should have these documents? This comes up a lot, so that people don't have to go searching for them or locked away in a safe deposit box.
Correct. Originals should be entrusted to the people who are named in the documents. So, for example, your healthcare surrogate should have original documents, copies as well, but they should have an original document in a place where they can access it.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a good idea if an attorney has drafted them. Most attorneys will hold originals for safekeeping as well, so that you have a backup original set. But putting it in a safety deposit box where nobody can access it after a death, for example, doesn't help anybody. It's locked away in a place where nobody can get to it.
Wow. So, Sherry, I want to thank you very, very much again. Real fast, how can people access the book, Facing the Finish, and also get in touch with you regarding LifeBridge Solutions? Give us those contacts one more time.
FacingTheFinish.com is where to go for the book, the workbook, or to join the community if they click on download free stuff, and they can register and they'll be able to access other materials that I offer for free. And if they want to reach me directly or learn more about my business, info@LifeBridgeSolutions.com is the place to go.
Thank you very, very much, Sherry, for joining us here this morning, for getting up real early in L.A. and calling in to us here. Facing the Finish, A Roadmap for Aging Parents and Adult Children is the name of the book. And it follows up, and you can contact Sherry at LifeBridge Solutions. And with that information and contact information that she just gave you, and it'll be on the podcast here at WWDB as well. So, Sherry, thank you very, very much. I wish you nothing but success and good health, and congratulations on all this good work that you're doing. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
The whole idea of making a plan, we talk about this a lot. One of the ways that we also talk about making a plan, and Sherry alluded to this, was the necessity of making a significant financial plan. And that reminds me of some very good friends of us, friends of ours here at Boomer Generation Radio, the Hecht Investment Group at Janney Montgomery Scott. Peter Hecht, that's H-E-C-H-T, who is a five-star wealth manager, been named by the Philadelphia Magazine and New Jersey Magazine for 2013 and 2014. Peter and his group, the Hecht Investment Group, they're of Janney Montgomery Scott. They provide a concierge financial consulting and planning service. They use a formal investment process as their foundation, and they really do follow up with clients. They give frequent communication, rapid response to questions. As we just again found out in our conversation with Sherry, there are very few needs greater than your own when it comes to personal financial planning, that idea of making a plan. And the Hecht Investment Group provides experience, guidance, and an efficient management process that is so important in today's environment. We urge you to contact the Hecht Investment Group toll-free at 855-289-2168. Tell them you heard about it on Boomer Generation Radio. Or we invite you to visit them at hechtinvestmentgroup.com. And the Hecht Investment Group is also on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. And we thank you for your attention. And please do give the Hecht Investment Group a call. That number again is 855-289-2168. I also want to mention another good friend of the show, 50andbeyond.com. And if you're listening to this, you are more than likely a baby boomer or a young senior. And thanks to our sponsor, 50andbeyond.com, for being the regional resource for baby boomers and aging adult populations. The 50andbeyond.com website simplifies the lives of baby boomers and seniors by providing the necessary information for those who are in the 50-plus age group. And this information ranges from health and wellness to travel and beauty tips, healthcare information, living options such as in-home care services, assisted living and dementia care, to also financial and legal information. 50andbeyond.com is a resource you will not want to be without. It is truly a one-stop shopping where you can gather all the information you or your aging loved one will need in all the areas of your life. And 50andbeyond.com is no longer just a website. It is now a regional bi-monthly printed edition, which is distributed across southern New Jersey. And you can visit 50andbeyond.com to download a digital copy. And you can also go to the contact page of 50andbeyond.com if you want a hard copy mailed directly to your door by putting your mailing address in the message box. 50andbeyond.com is on top of today's issues and concerns for baby boomers and the aging adult population. We urge you to visit 50andbeyond.com on a weekly basis to see the latest posted information that will surely be beneficial to all of you who are 50 and beyond. That's 50andbeyond.com. Hi, welcome back to Boomer Generation Radio. This portion of Boomer Generation, easy for me to say, is continued to be brought to you by Kendall. The Kendall is a system of not-for-profit communities and services located in 8 states in the Northeast, Mid-Atlantic, and near Midwest regions of the United States. And we thank Kendall for their ongoing and continuing sponsorship and friendship to Boomer Generation Radio. As we've told you before, Kendall advocates for and empowers older adults to reach their full potential and is committed to working with others to together transform the experience of aging. And to learn more about Kendall, that's K-E-N-D-A-L, we invite you to visit kendall.org or call them toll-free at 888-759-0128. That's 888-759-0128. And to our second segment, we would like to welcome Donna Butts, the Executive Director of Generations United. Generations United. Donna, welcome to Boomer Generation Radio.
Are you? Thank you, Rabbi. It's great to be with you.
Hi. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you?
That's not too bad. Not too bad. I guess. I hope. There wasn't too much traffic driving in today, so it was a good start. Listen, tell me about exactly what Generations United, it either sounds like either a football team or what is this? What is Generations United?
Well, Generations United is a national and actually international organization.
Oh, wow.
That really advocates for connecting generations and valuing the strength of each generation. So intergenerational programs, public policies, and practices.
So when did this start and why?
Well, it started almost 30 years ago, back in the mid-80s, and it was founded at a time when people were really trying to pit the generations against each other, which is something that continues in varying degrees over the years. But back in the mid-80s, our founders came together and said, no, we can and should support our most valuable and vulnerable bookend generations, our younger and our older people. And so it was founded by the Child Defense Fund, the Child Welfare League of America, the National Council on Aging, and AARP. And so they came together and said, yeah, no, we do have a better way. We are meant to be together. We're stronger together.
Wow. So I remember the old day, in the early day, in the 60s, you know, when the generational warfare was being trumpeted in the news, and we weren't supposed to trust anybody over 30. Now the joke is you don't trust anybody under 30. So, but this intergenerational thing, where is Generations United headquartered, Donna?
Generations United is headquartered in Washington, D.C., and then we have members and people who are part of our network all over the country. So, for example, Kendall has been a longtime friend and connected member of Generations United. So the members vary from people in public schools to people in faith-based organizations to churches, temples, synagogues, and community city government.
Wow. So is this like a membership organization? Do organizations join or do individuals join or both?
Well, it's a membership organization, and our members are generally organizations, and then we have individuals who are supporters or people who practice or who really believe in our mission, which is to really unleash the power of that happens when you connect generations.
So given what is that power? What is released, as you say, when generations are interconnected?
Well, you know, it's really, really interesting, Rabbi, because when you think about it, we all need purpose, and we all want to have a reason to get out of bed in the morning, whether we're younger or older, in between. And oftentimes, older adults are sort of on the sideline. They're not asked to be involved. They're not valued. And so what happens is that people of all ages have so much to give. So for older adults, they can contribute wisdom, they can contribute stories. It helps young people to have a sense of roots and of history and of knowing that life goes on. And then for young people, they feel like they've got something to offer and something to give. So I think probably a really good example would be if you have an intergenerational dialogue in a community about what people want to see happen in that community. For example, a small town in Arizona, they were concerned about brush fires when they brought older and young people together to talk about the community. So together they organized a community cleanup time, and they were able to really, I think, make a difference in the safety in their community.
So does Generations United get involved with any type of mentoring programming?
Yes, mentoring programs are an excellent intergenerational program, and they can and they should be. So, for example, there's a program called Across Ages, and what I love about it is it's a mentoring program that has older adults as the mentors. They mentor young people who've come into contact with the law, who've had some problems. And so they mentor the young people, but then together they develop and do a community service project. So there's the mentoring, there's that exchange and reciprocity between the generations, and then they're contributing back to their community.
So is Generations United in the majority of communities in the United States, or walk us through, say, some of your top experiences or programs that are now in operation?
Sure. We, as I said, we have members or parts of our network that are in almost every area of the country. Up on our website at www.gu.org, we have a map of the United States that you can click on to find what programs we know about that are in your community. And if you don't locate one easily that way, there are some really long-time established intergenerational programs like foster grandparents that are pretty much in every community. But I think one of the shining stars in the country is San Diego County. And San Diego County, about 12 years ago, made a commitment to be an intergenerational county. And so they started with some easy educational sessions, and then they started to insert some intergenerational language into notices of funds available in the county, and they hired an intergenerational coordinator for the county. And now it's so much a part of how they do business, how they look at opportunities in the county, that they have 5 intergenerational coordinators on staff in the county, which is phenomenal. And their programs range from technology programs where young people are at a senior center helping older adults learn how to access the internet, to a program called San Pasquale Academy, which is a school that has been taken over as a older foster child school and residency. And around the foster kids are some houses that older adults have committed to live in, and they get a reduced rent. All they need to do is do something with the kids, care about the kids. So it turns into a wonderful living environment, both for the young people that don't have that other older adult or other older person or person in their life that cheers them on, and then for the older adults, it gives them, again, that purpose. And that. Throughout the county, whether...
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say the other program in San Diego I'd mention, because I think it's very unique, is a workforce program, again, for foster kids. And the county will hire them for, I believe, about 3 months, and they're assigned an older adult mentor. And if they successfully complete the program, they actually get a job then when they graduate, which is one of the most important things for a foster kid who's aging out without anybody in their office.
We're speaking with Donna Butts, the Executive Director of Generations United, here on Boomer Generation Radio on WWDB AM 860 here in the greater Philadelphia area, and streaming live on WWDBAM.com. And just a reminder that if you want to contact the show with suggestions or ideas or concerns, BoomerGenerationRadio@gmail.com is the email address. That's BoomerGenerationRadio@gmail.com. Donna, with this program all over the country and trying to do some very, very important grassroots work, how challenging or different are you finding the development of these types of programs as you travel different ethnic or ethnic communities? Do you find a significant difference between different ethnic communities on how they view intergenerational work?
Oh, definitely, Rabbi. It's very interesting, because one of the changes that's underway in our country, and I'm sure you've probably read about this, is the increase in multi-generational households. And there are a number of reasons why they're increasing, but one of them is because of new immigrant populations. And so when you look at, in some cultures, they don't think about intergenerational programs. They think about family. They think about extended family. And it's a very natural, normal kind of thing for people to live together, to be engaged in activities together, to have that kind of larger extended family. So in particular areas where you have a large Hispanic population or Asian population, it's just more culturally a part of the norm. And the same with a lot of Jewish faith-based organizations and efforts. I think about Darot in New York, just a very strong sense of the generations being connected.
So it does
vary. It also depends on whether people have the opportunity to connect with other generations. And usually, what's interesting is that people they either don't think about it, or when it finally dawns on them, they think, "Oh, this makes so much sense. It's so simple to really understand that we have this incredible resource in our people, whether they're whatever age they are, they all have value and can contribute to community life."
Well, Donna, we'll be back with you 1 minute. I just want to remind everybody here on Boomer Generation Radio that this portion of the show is being brought to you by Kendall Outreach, serving the field of aging by raising public awareness and advocacy around important issues of older adults. And through education, training, and implementation of comprehensive approaches to safe, individualized, long-term care practices, Kendall Outreach has been sharing Kendall's approach to quality care with consumers, advocates, providers, government agencies, and related organizations since 1989. And to learn more, visit kendall.org. That's KENDAL.org, and click on Outreach. Again, we're back with Donna Butts, the Executive Director of Generations United, talking about this very, very interesting and growing concern of intergenerational program. And Donna, before we just did that spot for Kendall, you were talking about the various challenges and successes and differences in ethnic communities. One of the things that we're picking up in the aging world, obviously, in for a variety of reasons, you mentioned multi-generational households, but also a growing trend, it seems, to us, I'd like your opinion on this, of older adults who say, I'm not going into the nursing home. I will move in with our adult children, and they may have children of their own, you know, our grandchildren. And it's easier for us and safer for us and preferable for us as we age to live in back in this type of an arrangement. And or, and I'd love see if you're picking this up, groups of older adults who will bind themselves together in a house so that they'll live together, take care of each other, so that they don't have to go to a facility. Are you experiencing any of these issues in your work?
Oh, you're so right. There's so much attention now being paid to how people are choosing to live as they age. And it's going to continue to be a huge issue because boomers don't want to retire in any kind of a traditional way. I think that some of the Sun City gated communities have really seen their heyday, and they're seeing a decline in population because people want to be connected. They want to be connected to family. They want to be connected to community life. They want to be connected to friends and to other generations. So people are getting very creative and need to get very creative about how it is that they see their future. So we are seeing an increase in multi-generational households because families are realizing that they're stronger together, that it helps with caregiving, it helps with resources, it helps the children in the house, it helps the older people in the house. And so even developers are starting to really look at this and starting to design and develop houses for multi-generational families.
Really?
And then, there's one in Phoenix called the Next Gen, and it's by Lanier. And it's been getting a lot of attention because it's not sort of an add-on to a house. It's they actually have thoughtfully designed the house for more than one generation.
Wow, that's...
And then one thing that I think is really important, too, is that what happens in our country is that we look at things with these age-siloed lenses. We don't look across the age span. So we know that more older adults want to age in place and that it's less expensive for them to age in place. We also know that they want to live in communities like the communities that Kendall has, which are active, they're vibrant, they're not age isolated. They're very involved in the community. And a good example of that is Kendall and Oberlin, which received one of our best intergenerational community awards when we first started them 3 years ago, because Kendall, the university, the community are all intricately connected. So it really increases the quality of life in that community.
So what is a best intergenerational award?
Well, we, thanks to the MetLife Foundation, for the last 3 years, we developed a designation taking sort of the best of, the best of what's best for youth, the best of what's best for aging in place, best healthy environments, and we created a criteria. And so communities, large and small, will apply for the designation, and then we have a blue ribbon panel of judges that evaluate the application, and they select up to 3 to 5 communities a year that receive the designation. And they're communities where they intentionally engage people of all ages on community advisory groups. They think about how their facilities are being built. They think about how the facilities can be used around the clock by multiple generations. They think about how to invest in their young people and how to invest in their older citizens. And so they're good places to grow up and grow old.
So the Generations United, is the best intergenerational award different from the program award? You have a program of distinction award. Are those two different things?
Yes, they are. The programs of distinction is for an individual program. And that, again, the criteria was developed by some of the leading scholars in the country. And the people in the program will apply for the designation. And it's carefully reviewed. We give out very few of them because it's sort of the good housekeeping seal. It's the highest recognition that an intergenerational program can get in the country. So we have the programs of distinction and the best intergenerational community awards. And we've designed them so that somebody can go through the application and learn what a quality program or what the elements are of a best intergenerational community.
So let's assume that some people who are listening who are members of it or running or involved and they want to get involved with Generations United. I know you gave us the website, but take us through very nicely again. How does one get in touch with Generations United?
Well, through our website, which is full of resources, everything is downloadable and for free because our goal is to encourage this type of activity everywhere possible. So the website is GU for Generations United.org, and that has how to contact us. It has a number of resources, how-to guides, things like that. But then we also, something that's coming up is we have another website which is called GrandparentsDay.org. And Grandparents Day is on September 7th, and that website has an activity guide and ideas for people that want to celebrate across the generations on Grandparents Day.
Is that Grandparents Day just one continuous word?
Yes, it is. Uh-huh.
So I have to ask you, as a grandparent, just having a couple of our grandchildren live with us for a month, Is the nature of grandparenting changing? My sense is that it's very radically changing, but what's been your experience? Obviously, you're pushing this grandparentsday.org. Why?
You know, things are changing, and grandparents are viewing their roles in different ways. It sounds like you are. One of the things I think is an interesting indicator is Rhodes Scholar, or what used to be Elder Hostel. When I first had contact with them, I think about 13, 14 years ago, they had one or two intergenerational travel programs, and now it's the largest part of their portfolio because grandparents want to take their grandchildren to have experiences and to experience those things with them. So grandparent-grandchild travel has really, really increased. Also, grandparents, they want to be involved in their grandchild's life. They understand the joy of being able to be a grandparent, be that person, that special person in a child's life, be able to pass on family traditions and culture and history. And it helps to make families stronger. A great example is when you think about the White House and Mrs. Robinson, the president's mother-in-law who moved in with them when they moved there to help to care for their daughters. It was very normal, natural, and it's made the family stronger.
Yeah, you're right. It's a very different type of, much more active and involved grandparenting. And as my 5-year-old granddaughter, Princess Ayla, reminds everyone that my role is to do anything that she wants and give her anything that she wants, to which I say, absolutely, you're absolutely right.
But, and that brings a lot of joy to your life, and that brings her so much. It means so
brings
much
even
to
more
her
joy
life.
To her life. Believe me, not to her parents, you know. But you're right. I mean, it's something that I really want to explore more on one of the future shows here on Boomer Generation Radio. That this whole changing nature of grandparenting. But I know my friends. This is totally anecdotal, who are grandparents are very, very involved and do take their grandchildren, you know, on trips, et cetera, to build those memories. It's the memory building aspect of this is super important. So that's grandparentingday.org. That's September 7th.
Grandparentsday.org.
Oh, grandparentsday.org. Okay. I'm sorry.
Yes. And I'd also like to add, Rabbi, that one thing that's very important, too, is if you don't have a child in your life, find one. If you're not a grandparent, there's another child in your neighborhood, in your community that needs you. So it's not just up to the biological grandparents to care and invest in the next generation. It's up to all of us.
Now, I know there are some organizations that do, and schools and religious organizations that do, to try to have some sort of like an adopt-a-grandparent or adopt a grandchild program to build this intergenerational program. Before we start running out of time, and believe it or not, we're starting to run out of time. There's I want to explore one other thing with you that is very interesting right now. The baby boom generation, the 76 million people in the United States of America, are now surpassed population wise by the millennials. The last statistic I read a couple of weeks ago, that according to the Census Bureau, the millennial generation, these people from 18 to 30-something, are now larger in numbers than the baby boom generation. And this is a whole economic and political, et cetera, shift taking place. Do you see it, as opposed to the 60s, a greater series of communication and meeting and involvement between these two major generations than let's say, in the past. Is that what you're seeing, or not so much?
No, we are seeing a lot of connection. What's interesting is that the millennial generation actually likes their parents. And when people talk about millennials who aren't able to leave home because of school and or work shortages, they're able to stay at home, but it's not the drudgery that or the awful kind of circumstance that some people think about. Millennials and older adults actually like each other. And what I love about millennials is that they don't, there's a lot of screens that they don't have. Like, they don't necessarily see race, they don't necessarily see technology, and they really don't see age in the way that previous generations have. They think older people can be cool and can be their friends.
No, that's true. That's true. I see from my own kids and their friends. This is a reminder before we have to leave that this portion of Boomer Generation Radio has been brought to you by Kendall, a system of not-for-profit communities and services that advocates for and empowers older adults to reach their full potential. And together we are transforming the experience of aging. And to learn more about Kendall, again, that's K-E-N-D-A-L. We invite you to visit kendall.org. And again, the toll-free number is 888-759-0128, 888-759-0128. And we've been talking with Donna Butts, the executive director of Generations United out of D.C., a very, very fascinating series of programs. Real fast, we have about a minute left. Donna, does Generations United have people, staffers around the country, or is everything located in D.C.?
Our primary office is in Washington, D.C. We do have somebody in Seattle, Washington. And then, again, we have members and volunteers in many cities around the country.
So you're seeing, again, this rise in and need for this intergenerational programming. The website and contact information for those two websites, the main one and the grandparent one, give that to us again.
Generations United's website is GU for generationsunited.org, and then we also have grandparentsday.org, which has all kinds of ideas for celebrating Grandparents Day.
So that, and it's www.gu.org, correct?
Yes. Yes, and you can get to the grandparents, the other websites through that. If you only remember one thing, just remember GU, generationsunited.org.
Okay, cool. Very, very good. This has been great. Thank you very much. Lots of information and a very exciting emerging trend here in the United States of America. Thank you for the work that you're doing. Donna Butts, Executive Director of Generations United. And we wish you a very, very good week. Stay healthy and keep smiling in a world that's probably needs a lot more smiles than we have right now. You take care. We'll see you all next week on Boomer Generation Radio, Tuesday morning, 10 a.m. here on WWDB AM 860 in Philadelphia. Thank you.